5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. It is another episode of Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Carobbio. It's Chris Algieri. We're presented by PPV.com. It is Monday. We're coming off of a huge boxing weekend, the biggest boxing weekend of the year, and it was pretty damn good. We had some upsets. We had some dominant performances. Obviously, Shakur Stevenson defeating Teofimo Lopez will be spoken at length. Our pre-fight party that went deep into the night was an absolute success. Met so many great fans and listeners of the show, made a lot of good connections and friends. That was amazing. We'll talk about all of that. Chris, how you doing? I'm hurting. My voice is a little hoarse because of all the talking I did on Saturday night. It was freaking freezing, New York City. But all in all, good weekend. Successful weekend for the crew.
Fantastic weekend. And yes, I second the thought, the sentiment. I'm feeling rough. I'm tired, man. There was a lot of fights this weekend. A lot of traveling for me. I got back to Florida last night, and it's freezing here too. I cannot escape the cold. So feeling a little under the weather for certain. But man, life is good. Boxing is rocking and rolling. So I'm happy. I don't care how tired I am.
Shout out to everyone that came through. I think we had over 200 tickets sold. Jack Girls Restaurant and Bar met a lot of great listeners. People, boxing Twitter guys and ladies. There were ladies there.
That's good amount of ladies, actually. Way more than I expected.
Double digits, ladies. Great night. Awesome. We got to hang out, and then we stayed. Whoever stayed with us at the bar got to hang out and watch a bunch of fights. So we're definitely going to be doing more of those. It's still a little strategic. You know, it has to be a big fight. We have to make sure you're available. We have to make sure, you know, usually we want to do it in New York City, where we're both kind of from or have roots in. Maybe we take it on the road, because there were a lot of – I was just blown away by the amount of people are at the party that flew in.
Yes.
Just for the event.
Yep. Texas, Chicago.
Philly, Texas. Yeah. Right.
So many people. And, you know, I want to say that as well. You know, that I always say, you know, I always speak so highly about our listeners. Everyone's really smart. Everybody very cool. Now we get to actually see them and have them in front of us and talk to us. We do have the best listeners out there, and just good boxing talk, you know, just talking to people about fights, old fights, current fights, thoughts on this, thoughts on that. It was a lot of fun, and we definitely need to do this more. And I think the turnout speaks for itself. How many people came through on an ice cold, shivering Saturday night in New York City. We're having the coldest winter in decades, and people still came out walking through the snow, the dirty snow, freezing their butts off at 2-degree weather. It still came out and had a lot of fun.
It was cool to meet a lot of people that are like, yo, I do the voicemail. I left this voicemail. I've been listening to you guys since day one. It's hilarious.
Amazing. It's so funny. Yeah, one of the voicemail guys, I was like, yeah, I know your voice. I was like, when he started talking to me, I was like, oh yeah, I absolutely know your voice.
Yeah, shout out to our faithful listeners. We'll definitely do more of these. Leave a comment on YouTube or wherever if you're at the party, so I can kind of put like faces to names, because that's the hardest part.
And you guys who traveled, if you have any spots that you know of that would want to host us, you know, if we do take it on the road, let us know.
That was cool. Like, hey, I'm a couple father and sons coming from like Pittsburgh, coming from Ireland, buddies on a night out, or like people flying in just for the fight. Like, I blows my mind, because we're so entrenched in boxing. Like, I look at it almost as a job. I do love the sport as well. So when I hear about fans, like how they make a whole weekend out of it, and they drive down with their buddies or they fly, that's awesome. That's the type of fight it was. That's the type of event it was. So shout out to everyone that put the event together too, because it was a success. I mean, they had a sold out Madison Square Garden, where we talked about, is there buzz, when you could see the buzz and you could see how excited all the fans were at the bar and around the garden all week long. Yes, this was a big fight. It's our first big fight of the year. So let's break it down. Shakur Stevenson absolutely blanks Teofimo Lopez, 11-1, 12-0 type of fight. Sometimes the fights play out exactly how we thought they would, Chris. We all predicted that Shakur would win the fight. We predicted he could run away with it. The one little thing, I didn't think he'd be this dominant. I didn't think he'd be able to completely take over the fight from maybe the second round on.
Yeah, I pretty much thought the fight was over in the second round. That was I'm watching the writing on the wall in the second round, and I said it that night when we were there. I'm like, this fight's over. Like,
there's a video out. Yeah. I posted it. It's you in the second round. So you pretty much just leave the bar at that point.
Yeah, I was like, but fight's over, guys. This is it. But yeah, no, you saw it. The writing was on the wall. Yes, we know what Shakur can do. We know how sublime his skills are. We know how good he is. But to be able to do that to another equally good fighter, and I just saw a tweet from Shakur. He just said, he's like, yeah, I watched back the fight. And he's like, man, Teofimo's really good. He's like, I'm just on a different level. And that's exactly right. And the way that he fights is so disarming. Doesn't matter what you bring. He can make you look so bad. And it's not a knock on Teofimo. It's like, I beat him 12-1, 12-0, 11-1. It's just the way the styles match up. Was never a good matchup for Tio. But also Shakur was completely locked in. Had a great game plan. Excuse me. Kept it simple, but what a night, and this is just a breakout performance for Shakur.
Shakur lands 44% of his total punches, 50% of his power shots, 41% jabs. Yikes. That's that rarefied air when you're 40-40-40. That's unheard of. I mean, that's Floyd Mayweather type numbers. I tweeted that out. He's so precise. And the thing with Shakur in this fight is, like, I don't think he even got out of first gear.
Nope.
I didn't see any wasted movement.
Yeah, the energy expenditure between the two of them was so drastically different. Tio was working so hard to get nothing done, and Shakur looked like he wasn't working at all and getting everything done.
Yeah, exactly. You saw it. You could sometimes you don't even have to be a hardcore boxing fan to watch that fight and be like, all right, one guy is in complete control, and the other guy is flailing. He's cut. He's bleeding. His corner is in disarray. The other guy barely broke a sweat. And obviously, the guy that barely broke his sweat is Shakur Stevenson. I mean, he keeps Teofimo to 15% landed punches.
That's ridiculous. And listen, we know what Shakur does, in terms of his style. But the answer to that is a physical phenom type guy like a Teofimo Lopez, who's so explosive, where you make one mistake and he cracks you and then he builds his momentum. That just never happened. Shakur never gave him an opportunity to live at all. He didn't give him anything. And he made it look easy, which is crazy to say.
We'll get to Teofimo in a second. There's a lot to break down with him and where he goes from here. But with Shakur, I was super impressed with the distance control. We've talked about this. Mm-hmm. It's one of the greatest aspects of his game. Is right off the bat, he was sticking that jab. The first round, he landed how many jabs? 10 of 16, landed 63% of his jabs. And once I saw that jab, how sharp it was, and it was snapping back the head of Teofimo, I was like, okay, this is going to be a long night for Lopez, because Lopez doesn't have long arms. Like, he was disarmed almost right away. He didn't have any snap on his punches. He didn't have any legs. He just seemed zapped in there. And I don't want to hear any Monday morning quarterback. I don't want to hear any revisionist history. Teofimo was the guy at 140 pounds. You want to bring up the Kambosos fight. You want to bring up the Sandor Martin fight, the Jermaine Ortiz fight. Okay. The guy was looked at as one of the best. And I don't want to hear Shakur beat an average or a hyped up guy, a guy that, you could pick apart any resume out there, any performances out there. Heading into this fight, Teofimo was looked at as a top guy in the division. You want to argue where he is elite, the Lomachenko win and all that. So for Stevenson to go in there and complete control, I do think it's one of the greatest single performances of the last 20 to 25 years.
Well, on top of, Teofimo's accolades, and yes, I hate the Monday morning quarterback, and we're like, but he wasn't really that good. No, he's very good. And on top Please of that, on top of that, on top of him being as good as he is with the accolades that he has, he was stylistically the guy. If there was anyone that could beat Shakur, it was going to be that guy. And a lot of people, we talked about that. Granted, you and I both picked Shakur. Most boxing pundits and people who are in the know pick Shakur just because of the style matchup. But there's always that little thought in your head, like, well, Teo's really explosive and he can punch enough that he can get your respect and hurt. He rocks Shakur and then builds his momentum and then makes it a fight. So it's not just that the guy is good. He is also the guy that we would expect if there was someone to give Shakur trouble. It would have been him. He's a good counterpuncher. He's fast. He's explosive. He can punch. And he changes range really, really well and fast. And no, just completely shut all of that down. Absolutely disarmed. And it's demoralizing. If you're a fighter and you're in there and you just can't get anything going. And you saw that not even in Teofimo, But his father, the corner, they were all demoralized by the middle of the fight. There was no answer for anything. There was no game plan B, C, D, E, F, whatever. You need 100 game plans to fight Shakur, but literally nothing was working.
You said something there. It's very demoralizing. And I was thinking, I was putting together my notes for this show. And it's not something I've ever really asked you on this show. You have reached the highest level of this sport. You fought in world title fights. You've won world titles. You fought big names. You've come up short in big fights. What does it feel like to come up short on the biggest stage?
Yeah, so of course, I think of the Pacquiao fight. But the Pacquiao fight was a little different. Like this, I couldn't get really much going in that fight either, kind of similar to how Teo might have felt. But the problem was I kept getting hurt. So I wasn't thinking so much about, you know, I was trying to get back in the fight, obviously, and win rounds. But like Pacquiao kept hurting me. Like he hit me with a shot and like I would be rocked. And then I'm like, now I gotta focus on getting my legs underneath me so then I can get back into the position of trying to win the fight. So by the time I got to the end, I was like, I missed all my opportunities to try and actually, you know, be the winner of this fight. But I didn't really have a lot of answers for him. And it was a real shame for me. And that bothered me a lot and demoralized me because I was like, I could have done so much better, but I was fighting the power so much to deal with him that I couldn't really get my game plan going. And the fact that he came out of the gate so fast in the fight really kind of shocked me, hit me right in that damaged eye immediately, which was, I know, was a game plan of Freddie Roach. And immediately I started thinking, I was like, oh no, the eye again, here we go. But yeah, no, it's humbling because you're a man, you got two hands, you're a fighter. This is what you do. You're one of the best in the world. And then you get in there with somebody and you just don't have an answer for them. And it makes you really go back to the drawing board and think about what you're doing and what you need to do in the future to get better. Or you fall off, which a lot of guys do when they have losses like that.
Yeah, I got to figure like that you're feeling the fight slip away. You're feeling physical pain. You're feeling mental pain. And I think that's what happened with Teofimo.
You're also embarrassed. You're embarrassed.
That's what I mean, bro. I was about to say, like,
you're super embarrassed.
Everyone was there. Like that was, look, ringside, that was probably the most decorated ringside group of former fighters and active fighters because of the whole ring. 20,000 people there, biggest fight of the year, everyone watching. You know, rarely get to think about that, like when a fight starts to slip away from you and you lose on the biggest stage. That's the Teofimo. So I do want to continue with Shakur and just talk about how he won this fight. You know, the knock on Shakur coming in, and it will probably still be with him because people are just stereotype fighters and they're unwilling to change the perception of a fighter. He did not run in this fight. Mm-hmm. He did not really take a step back. He took a step back to evade a shot and then landed a 1-2. Like, he did not run. Like, watch the Josh Kelly fight. That dude was on his bike. That's moving. Shakur won this fight doing everything that a lot of fans said he could not do. He stayed in the pocket and delivered. Did jab a lot, but he did deliver enough power shots to keep his opponent honest. And you got to give the guy credit there because he's not a runner anymore. This is a legitimate talent. And we're now going to see from this fight on a guy that just can't be beat and a guy that you're going to tune in to see who can beat him. Like you said, like, can your favorite fighter beat this guy? Probably not. But just the way he won the fight, Chris, in terms of not running, pretty much standing in the pocket, trading, and just having unreal instincts and reflexes. Unbelievable.
I said it, what was it, 2 months ago on our air, on our show, and people came down a lot of heat with this. I was like, hey, listen, Shakur isn't always going to, he's never going to be that guy that, you know, everyone's going to, I'm rushing to see because his fights are so exciting. No, he's going to be the guy who beats your favorite fighter. And if he goes out there and he does 11-1, 12-0 on a guy like Teofimo Lopez, now we're in that rarefied Floyd Mayweather air. Everybody went bananas when I said that. Guess what? We're back around to that.
You can't bring up Floyd's name. People don't get it. Like, I tweeted it yesterday. They see someone being compared to Floyd. And whatever you said just now after the Floyd part of that sentence, no one even listens.
Yeah, just blocks out. Ah, Floyd. Yeah, it's not Floyd. But so, you know, people were saying
what you just said.
It is. I mean, because that's what you tuned in. Floyd's heyday, and I remember we're old enough to remember. We were like growing up in it. You know, I remember like my dad's friends were just tuning in to see him lose. They hated him. They didn't like the way he operated. They didn't like the way he talked. You know, these guys that worked on the town of Huntington, these blue collar guys were like, ah, no, this guy's going to beat him. That guy's going to beat him. And I remember everybody being like, oh no, Zab's going to be the guy who's going to beat him. This is going to be, De La Hoya's going to be the one that's going to,
right.
You know, it's going to be Pac. Everyone was like, it was always that. And then he went out there and he did what he did with everybody and he beat everyone. Shakur is that same type of fighter. I'm not saying they're the same person. I'm not saying that he's what, but the path to the superstardom is very similar. I have a style that completely disarms everyone. And whether you like me or hate me, I'm going to beat your favorite guy. And it doesn't have to be super exciting because I don't have to get hit. And if you don't get hit, you can't lose. And that's the thing. Defense wins championships. That's that old saying. But it really says it in boxing too. If you can't hit me, you can't win. And guys can't hit Shakur. Now, talking technically what he was actually doing, it was a very simple game plan. He fought very simple boxing. It was that pendulum step where he was going out and out and out and consistently, perfectly, and in tune with Teofimo's rhythm. And Teofimo's really hard rhythmically to find because he's so explosive and he changes direction so quickly. So the fact that Shakur was able to find Teofimo's timing so quick was really impressive from that standpoint to be able to watch him do that. And then, of course, the jab sets the table with everything. And when anything got out of sorts just a little bit, Shakur went back to the jab and just righted the ship and immediately got back to the standard and center.
Well, people are like, oh, he threw too many jabs. He threw more power shots than jabs. He threw 400 power shots and he threw 250 jabs. Because the people are still going to find reasons to criticize him. Like I just watched a clip of Shannon Sharp. I just watched a clip of Shannon Sharp, and Shannon Sharp's like, I'm never going to pay to go to a Shakur Stevenson fight. And Ocho Cinco checked because he's a diehard boxing fan. He's like, what do you mean? Like, we're watching the next Floyd in terms of what you just said. So, yeah, pump the brakes there too. Like, do I wish Stevenson would have maybe stepped on the gas pedal and that maybe that's the difference between him and like a Keyshawn Davis, who we'll talk about in a second, who went for the KO and got it, or a Tank Davis, who's still being compared to Shakur and still being hypothetically talked about on Twitter despite going through an insane amount of legal issues. I mean, we might never see Tank fight again. But that's the difference. Tank would knock out guys, but Shakur's a different type of fighter. He's not, even the guys at the bar we were watching the fight with, fans, were like, not thrilled with the aspect that fight's not going to do much to like grow the sport. Or that fight's not going to do much to bring casual eyeballs in because he didn't go for the knockout in rounds 10, 11, 12 when Teofimo's face was, his eyes completely shut, he's bleeding, he's demoralized. It's just not Stevenson's game. Like, he's not going to do that. That's just not going to be him.
It's also, we got to keep this in mind too. And I think people forget, it's his fourth weight class. So I saw some comparisons to people being like, oh, this is like when Floyd fought Chico Corrales, you know, but you know, Floyd went for it and got him out of there. Yeah, but that was at 130. But you know, when Floyd had his big fights four weight classes later at 47, he's a different guy. So Shakur is in his fourth weight class. He's at 140. He's not really a 140 pounder. He's really a 35 pounder. And again, he's coming up from 30 and 26 even. So, you know, he's taking these fights and he's not being overly risky because these guys are dangerous. Teo can punch. He's always can punch, even that 12th round. And also to your point, that's not his game. He's not going to be that guy who's going to go forward and look to get you out of there and put himself on the line. Held Teofimo to 15% landed punches.
That's wild.
So home run hitters strike out a lot. Knockout fighters, knockout punchers usually get hit a lot more too. And Shakur just is not willing to get hit. So you're not going to see him take those risks. Floyd used to talk about it all the time. He's like, I'm not going in there to entertain you. I'm going there to win. And I win by making you miss.
Yeah, but the Floyd comparison too, it's like, we're not comparing Floyd to Shakur skill-wise or no. Superstardom-wise, because it's a different time. No. Like, Floyd came along at the best time ever with HBO and 24/7 and all that. And obviously, like, the skills, you can debate that all you want. We're talking about from here on out, they're going to match up Shakur with different personalities, different types of fights, because he's going to be favored over everyone. That's why I don't mind Conor Benn getting in the ring. I don't mind Conor Benn potentially fighting Shakur Stevenson, because obviously Shakur is going to be the favorite in that fight. Benn doesn't deserve that fight. He's never even fought for a world title. Now he's going to go up against a four-division champion, but he's the perfect foil for Shakur Stevenson. He's a big name. He's braggadocious. He looks the part, because you're ultimately going to lose to Shakur. And that's why Shakur wants that fight. I was told last week, oh no, he's going to go back down to 135. He might stay at 140. No, he's going to look for the biggest fights possible. And Conor Benn represents the biggest money fight possible for Shakur. That's the type of matchmaking we're going to see going forward for Shakur Stevenson. Big names, different types of opponents, and you're going to watch, you're going to tune in, and you're going to watch him disrobe your favorite fighter.
And 135 ain't it. We're not, I know a lot of people were talking to me, like, oh, he's going to go back down 135. I'm like, if he wins this fight and he wins it the way that it seems like he's going to, he's not going back down. The marquee fights are all north of 40. Everything is at there. And there's really tough, good fighters at 135 and like hardcores like you and I. Like, yeah, I would like to see him fight, you know, Abdullah Mason or, you know, or Mordetaya. But when you're talking about dollars, when you're talking about money in the bank, it's all in the 40s. You've got the, you mentioned the Conor Ben fight. You've got Devin Haney. You know, these are huge, huge fights. Ryan Garcia, huge fights. So, yeah, I don't see him going back down to 35. I do see him chasing the bag. You're a four-division world champion. Now it's time to get paid.
Dude, what else? Never been, and you're riding
what else are you looking
high.
For?
Yeah. And you're riding high. Like, I see some putting him in the top four pound for pound. Got him above Bivol. Discussions with, should he replace Bam on the top list? Now that Crawford's out of the pound for pound list, like, where do you put Shakur? Is he top five pound for pound? He's virtuoso. He's being compared to Floyd Mayweather. He's looked at as one of the best pound for pound fighters and the technical fighters today. So, yeah, I don't think he's going backwards. So I think he's looking for the biggest fights. He even said it afterwards. I do want to ask you, though, who exactly? Who? I just don't see anyone beating Shakur from 135 to 147. Who are some names out there that you could see giving him issues?
You know, I was saying, I said this a few weeks ago. He's as close to an unbeatable fighter as there is right now. You know, everyone can be beat. We're all human. He is the guy I would put at number one as the most unbeatable. Like, we've seen Naoya Inoue, as good as Naoya Inoue is, right? We've seen him down. We've seen him have trouble in fights. We've never seen that from Shakur. We've never seen him buzzed. We've never seen him down. We've never seen him really struggle. He doesn't lose rounds. It's just, he's as close to unbeatable as any fighter there is alive today. Who gives him trouble?
I think Abdullah Mason.
Obviously. That was who was the first one into mind, but he's so young. And I think he needs a little more
style,
seasoning.
Like, yeah. Like not being like, he's younger. He's athletic. He's got power. That 135.
The length too. You need to be long and fast and athletic stylistically to give Shakur problems.
Keyshawn Davis. They're never going to fight Davis. Each other, but Keyshawn Davis
they
versus
may
Shakur
have
Stevenson
to, guys.
Is so intriguing.
They may have to. That's like, that could be a modern day De La Hoya Trinidad, Sugar Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns. That's actually more like that. That's just Sugar Ray Leonard, Tommy. You got to do it. I'm sorry, buddy. Let's go split $50 million together. I know we're buds and we train. Let's go split $50 million together. How about that?
I mean, Mordetaya to a lesser degree because he's got pressure at 135, but he's not going down to 130. I think the 135 days are over.
No, but I think I can see Mordetaya going up, though. Mordetaya is really big. I don't think
but he's not
going to
get that fight at 140 with Shakur. Like,
no.
The only reason he gets it because of it would be like a ring lineal unification at 135. No one at 140, I think, really gives Shakur fits. So I don't think it's anyone at 140 where Shakur would look at and say, oh, this makes sense for me right now. Like, obviously, I love a Gary Antoine Russell versus Shakur, but I don't know if Shakur wants to go the route and Dalton Smith, you know, maybe because of the UK aspect of it. But Shakur should stay here in the States and continue to sell here. I mean, he put asses in seats, dude. I understand a lot of people were there for Teofimo, but, you know, Monday morning now, it's all about Shakur Stevenson. And then 147, I don't understand why we're not seeing any traction between Devin Haney and Shakur Stevenson. Where is that
too? And I was wondering. I'm like, even when I said it just now, I'm like, wait, are these guys friends? What's up? Like, I don't really hear about them going back and forth. And you know, Devin gets into it with everybody. But apparently, we had a lot of Devin Haney situations, you know, fight week over here. So yeah, that is a really good looking fight. A fight I'd like to see. And what I mentioned, you got a tall, long, fast, athletic boxer type. That's a pretty good matchup if you think about it.
Yeah, because I see Haney's name being linked with. Who's he being linked with? I see Haney's name being linked with Keyshawn Davis's name.
Yes.
And I see Shakur and Ben. I'm like, this is all wrong. It should be Shakur and Haney. Like, that's built towards that at 147. I mean, that would be a very technical fight. And I just think that jab of Shakur's would give him fits, Haney. But it would be super technical. But we just have to keep seeing these are the types of fights we have to keep seeing. And I think Shakur made his name in a very big way, and now he will be mentioned in three different weight classes now moving forward. But I think that Ben fight is there's a reason he came into the ring. There's a reason why Shakur was so adamant about it. it's going to piss people off, which is sneakily an aspect of marketing and boxing today. Mm-hmm. People hate Conor Ben. Does he deserve it? Absolutely not. But he is a name. He's a foil. Shakur missed out on so many big fights in his career because he didn't have a dance partner. He didn't have an enemy or a foe. Like the Teofimo, that was not really an enemy. They were buddies. They were stable mates. They turned it into something. Teofimo acted like a jackass for the last year to build up something there. I do think that Ben, there's some heat there between Ben and Shakur. Over to Teofimo, man, that's a pretty demoralizing loss. I mean, everything went wrong inside of the ring. Everything went wrong in his corner. He's talking about going up to 147. His post-fight interview, I don't know if you caught that, was super sad and just a rough one for Teofimo. There's a lot of people basking in it because I said the last year he said some pretty heinous things. And, you know, you always said, Chris, you got to pay for them in the ring. It's a sport where you can get in the ring and punch someone in the face and get away with it. So Shakur was able to do that and rough him up and made him, you know, I think afterwards, did he say apologize for slavery in the ring? Some wild stuff from Teofimo after this fight. But from a boxing standpoint, he just didn't have anything. And he's going back to the drawing board in a very, very big way. I really don't know where he goes from here outside of him saying 147's in my future.
He had no answer for anything that Shakur was doing. There was no plan B in the corner. That was very, very obvious. Demoralizing defeat. Him at 47 is not a good weight class for him. He's small for 40. I don't see how he competes with the best in the world at 47. You know, those guys get big up there. Devin Haney's big. Like Devin Haney, you know, he's in his third weight class now. He's a big 47 pounder. I just don't see Teofimo being a fit and a good at 47 at the highest level. Not a good fit for him. Even when he went from 35 to 40, he didn't get any bigger. He's like the same size he was at lightweight fighting at 40. He's just so athletic and gifted. He's able to make it happen. And also we saw a steep drop off in his power and his knockouts at 40. So going up another weight class just doesn't make sense to me. But in terms of what's left for him, I think there are some fights there. My guy, Paul Imanagi, brought up a really sneaky good point. Kambosos rematch? Coming off of a loss? Right into that fight?
You know George wants it.
Yeah, of course he does. Of course he does. That's a meaningful fight. At 40. George has been fighting at 40. I think the fight makes a lot of sense. It's been a bad mark, a stain on Kambosos and on Teofimo's career for a long time. They sell the fight. The first fight was actually very good. It was an entertaining fight. Yeah, so why not? Why not? I think that makes a lot of sense.
But we're seeing with the amount of money that's in the sport now with Saudi and like these big fights, it's like guys are jumping weight classes now. Like, you know, you have Shakur jumping weight classes. You have now Teofimo saying, I want to go to 147. You have Keyshawn Davis
saying same thing.
Who's now looking at 147 pounders. Like a lot of there's money out there. So these guys are all looking for the biggest names. That's great for us as fans. Let's see some of these big fights get made, but sometimes they don't make sense. So when I saw Teofimo say, I want to go to 147, I'm thinking, dude, you were outsized at 140. Mm-hmm. Against Shakur. Like you look tiny in there and compared to a guy coming up from 135, but I don't know what motivates Teofimo anymore. Does like a fight with any of the champs at 140 motivate him? I do think he has to change trainers. Like Teofimo Lopez has to change trainers. He has to take a hard look at his dad because those were some of the worst instructions I've ever heard in that corner. Just get after him. Where's your power? Where's your footwork? Get it. Just nothing. No instructions. They didn't get the cut fixed. The cut man. I mean, it was just a putrid performance from the corner of Teofimo. I don't know if he's going to do that because that guy is extremely loyal to his dad. They're a ride or die, but I truly think he needs to take a look within and a look at his team and change some things up.
Yeah. At the highest level, every part of the team has to be locked in. And it just seems like there's that whole team, that whole corner is in disarray. And, you know, and I've been around fight weeks with Teofimo Lopez. The kid operates in chaos and he does it usually very well. But at the highest level, when you've got a guy like an operator like Shakur Stevenson, that's not going to work anymore. You've got to be able to step up and make this a true professional camp with quality instruction and quality team members, and everybody's on the same page. You can't just get by on your physicality anymore, especially in these weight classes at this level. You know, at 30 and 35, you know, yeah, it's a little bit different. You had that game changing power. I mean, 35, excuse me. So I think he was able to be chaotic, and then on fight night go out there and just rely on his abilities. He tried to rely on his abilities on Saturday, and it failed miserably. And again, like I said, there was no plan B in the corner. There was nothing that they worked on. They just thought that they were going to go out there and beat Teofimo Lopez, and you were going to be able to beat Shakur like that. At this level, that's not enough.
Bro, chaos is not sustainable. Nope. I remember we've talked about this numerous times. It could work on a fight week. It could work here and there. Not sustainable. Not if you want to have a long career. Not if you want to beat the elites. And we'll see what Teofimo wants to do. That post-fight interview was, you know, that was a guy that was down and out. I do think he has a lot of markability still. Like, he's a big-time name in this sport. Maybe he looks at 147 and sees, like, a Brian Norman matchup, a Devin Haney matchup. I mean, I still want to see those fights. He may not come out of them on top, but I still want to see them. I still believe he has a lot of God-given ability. But we've seen fighters train with their fathers for too long. And we've seen fighters leave their fathers and go find new trainers. Brian Norman comes to mind most recently. So maybe working with a Robert Garcia, working with a Derek James, or working with a Buddy McGirt, someone that can tap into something different here, like have you turn into a little bit more of a front foot fighter. You're not going to change everything at this point in his career. He's 27, 28 years old. But you can develop some better habits. You can develop a front foot technique. You can lean on your jab a little more, fine-tune some of the things, and just the chaos that the dad brings. The dad, you know, his father wasn't at the press conference, and there was strong rumors that he was hungover. I mean, like, we've heard things about the dad. Like, there's the chaos part. I 100% agree. That's a big part of Teofimo's life, but you can't do that week in, week out on these fight weeks at the highest level if you want to get to the tippy top. And you could attest to this way more than I could.
And you're definitely not going to be doing it as you age. It's one thing when you are just a phenom physically. Yeah, when you're 24, 25, that's one thing. But when you get up there, we've seen precipitous drop-offs of certain fighters, the ones that rely on their physical talents and gifts. Roy Jones Jr. comes to mind. You know, just you get to a certain point where if you weren't super disciplined and structured in your training and the way you are able to adjust in the ring, you're going to fall off. Makes me think opposite, Bernard Hopkins. He was a guy who had a lot of physical talent and gift when he was younger, scored a lot of knockouts, was aggressive, was a good puncher. And then as he got older, he transferred over to a structured approach with his training, his preparation. He slowed down the pace. He changed his technique. He was a completely different guy. It was the two versions of Bernard Hopkins' career. So when they had the rematch with Roy and Bernard wins because they were fighting at an older age and a different pace. And where Roy was still relying on his physical gifts, he had no answer for Bernard when they fought. So I think we're seeing a similar thing with Teofimo. And that's just the archetype of these types of fighters. Shakur Stevenson is that archetype of a very structured approach, very, very smart technical fighter. Doesn't rely as much on his physical gifts, even though he has them. And this is why the comparison... excuse me.
It's been a long weekend, bro.
Wow.
New York City got him. Man, New York City got Algeri.
I told you, I was feeling under the weather.
Get some water in him.
Oh. Man, I was making a good point, too.
Cut me, Mick. So
this is why the comparison with Floyd Mayweather makes actually so much sense, and even though people don't agree with it, it's because the archetype of the fighter. Floyd had a lot of physical gifts, but he relied, as he got older in the higher weight classes, on his technical superiority. Mm-hmm. Shakur was seeing that as well. And then, obviously, you've got Teofimo Lopez, who's the opposite. And again, I'm going to go back to that comparison of Chico Corrales. Chico Corrales was very similar to Teofimo Lopez. Chaos. The guy operated in chaos. He could punch. He was physically gifted. He relied on that. His career didn't age well either. As he got up in weight class, as he got a little bit older, he started taking more and more losses. And as Floyd went off to be perfect, I think there's a lot of similarities in the trajectory of both Teofimo Lopez, Shakur, to Floyd, and to Chico Corrales.
He's still young. He's still in his physical prime. He's still 29. Like, he still can depend on the physical aspects. He just needs a better voice right now. He needs a new voice. And it's none of our business, really. But this is the job we're in, where we recommend things, we analyze, we opine. There's a lot of people out there saying the same thing. Like, the dad, he's out of control. I mean, if there's any truth to the rumor of why he wasn't there at the press conference, or it even with it wasn't even that chaotic for Teofimo, as far as we could see. Like, he was pretty locked in for this camp. He wasn't doing a lot of crazy stuff. You know, he said he stopped doing a lot of interviews, and he kind of really, really focused because he knew there was a serious task at hand with beating Shakur Stevenson, and he still came up short. But those, I mean, you have one end of it, and you see what's going on in Teofimo's corner, just the worst instructions ever. Then you have Wally Moses, who's the grandfather of Shakur Stevenson. Hey, now let's double up the jab. Let's go upstairs and downstairs and start hitting him with the 1-2s. Clear, concise. you know, it was stark difference in between the two corners. And those are the margins, and that's how you win fights. And Shakur's got an unbelievable team between his corner, Jay Prince, the Crawford, Ward, Clarice Shields. I mean, that is quite the team that Shakur has, and it's very impressive. So shout out to Teofimo and Shakur for putting on a great fight week, and we'll see what both men do, because Teofimo is going to go back to drawing board and Shakur is going to keep ascending. Keyshawn Davis got a win. I thought he looked great, considering he's been off for a year, and he had a tough guy in there, and Jermaine Ortiz, who was at there at the top level, went the distance with Teofimo, went the distance with Lomachenko. Drops Ortiz in the 11th, stops him with 13 seconds to go in the 12th. What I loved about Keyshawn is he's very spiteful. He's a spiteful puncher in there, and he had the fight locked up in the 11th and 12th, especially the 12th, because I was watching with a bunch at the bar. I was like, I want to see what he does here in the 12th. Is he going to still put belt to ass and try to knock out Ortiz? Yes, he did. He stalked him around the ring in the 12th and went for the knockout and got it. Keyshawn Davis, a lot of mental issues and all that, but this dude's got something special inside of him, and that was a great performance, all things considered.
He's the total package, because he has the physical God-given gifts. He's got those, right? Those intangibles that just come from the mighty Lord. Then he's got the technical background as well, the amateur background, the Olympics, high-level training facility, training camp, training methods around him. And then he's got that other thing that you just said, that spite, that nasty streak in him, like a Sugar Ray Leonard did. Sugar Ray Leonard had everything too. He had all of those components, the physical gifts, the speed, the power, the technical, the superiority, the amateur background, the pedigree. But he also was mean. He wanted to knock you out. He wanted to break you. Keyshawn has that, and he goes for it, and he's willing to put himself on the line risky wise in order to hurt you more. And that's a fan friendly fan fight favorite kind of skill to have, an ability, and not all guys have it. We're looking at Shakur, very, very different in terms of having that spite. Shakur is a nasty guy too, and you see that the way he is with his competitiveness,
different type,
but Keyshawn's different.
Well, the one thing he is missing, though, is I arguably think it's the toughest part of boxing, is the mental.
Yeah.
It's just going to be him.
The stability.
Above his shoulders. Yeah. It's just going to be above his shoulders. If he can lock in and he can fight those demons, and he's got substance abuse issues from his own admission, mental health issues, if he can fight those demons, he can channel that. Because I do think all you fighters have demons. I mean, it takes a special type of person to step into a ring. Yes, certain aspects you need to have. Like, we don't want him blowing weed. We don't want him smoking weed during camp. We don't want him drinking during camp, like he has admitted to in the past. But this guy is someone that you could market around. And because he goes in there and looks for wins, looks for stoppages. You know, everyone's who's the next Bud, or he fights like Bud.
Very much.
He fights like Bud. He goes in there and looks for it. His body work is just – he just got it. And we missed him for a year, and for the last year it's been, I can't believe you blew past the weight. I can't believe what you did with your brother in that backstage thing. And he had to eat crow, and he had to go through that. We'll see how he comes out of it on the other end, because there's a big fights for him. I do think he gives Shakur fits. I'll probably never see it. After the fight, Keyshawn Davis calls out Devin Haney. Devin Haney accepts it on Twitter. Could we see Keyshawn Davis and Devin Haney, even though Keyshawn has one fight at 140 and Haney's got one fight at 147?
Yeah, why not? I don't see why not. If these guys are down, doesn't seem like a very hard fight to make, especially if both fighters want it. There's plenty of money circulating the sport. You know, it's an intriguing fight. I don't know who wouldn't want to see that fight. Why not? let's go.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not opposed to it. I mean, it's got to the point where we're just, yes, whatever, like Ben versus
yes, Shakur. Everybody, okay. Fight everybody. Yes, fight.
Keyshawn versus, and that's the beauty of there's not really any politics involved in the sport now. It's pretty much any fight could be made with Saudi Arabia and Turkey. So it's endless opportunities. You can literally dream up any type of scenario, like a Keyshawn Davis fighting a Devin Haney at 147, even though, like we said before, I'd rather see Shakur maybe fight Devin. Ryan Garcia is going to have something to say about all this. Like Keyshawn could fight some names at 140. So there's just almost like too many options now, where in the past, maybe like 5 years ago, it's like, all right, he's with Top Rank. All right, there's too many politics involved. We're never going to see the A versus B. So let's
or that there's not enough money in the pot for both these guys to take the risk, because they're not like profile won't match it. The fight won't make. But when you have, like you said, when you have Turkey money who's willing to foot the bill to make the fights, we're in a very unique time era of boxing.
Yeah, anything makes sense at this point right now. That could change, of course. But yeah, I thought Keyshawn looked great. Got the stoppage win. Bruce Carrington could easily up there as stealing the show, knockout to get his first title in MSG as a New Yorker. Awesome stuff. Just like while you watch the sport and you see the emotion on his face, stops Carlos Castro. And now he's got his title. We've talked about him on the show numerous times. It's like, oh man, this guy has got a lot of things going for him. He just doesn't have that title or title shot. Man, he kicked the door down.
Yeah, realizing a dream, doing it at the Garden, getting a knockout for your first world title. I mean, you couldn't write a better script for the kid, and he deserves it. He's been working really hard for a very long time. And he's a New York guy who calls, you know, he calls out everybody. He backs up what he says. I love it. I'm very proud, you know, proud of him as a New Yorker. But there's a lot of tough fights in this weight division, man. 126 is deep.
All right. I hope you had a great moment, Bruce, because now you got a target on your back, and now you've talked a big game about the other champions in this division. You know, Nick Ball, whose fights next week against Figueroa. You got Angelo Leo, who is a hard punching, proven tough featherweight, and you got Rafael Espinosa, who's a freak, who's 6'12" with a 90-inch wingspan and can sing. So, yeah, Bruce.
And throws 100 punches around.
Right. I'm happy for you, Bruce. But now, here we go. Unify. Get in there. These are some great matchups. I mean, the champions I just named all bring something different to the table and are all great champions. So, let's see it.
That's the thing, though. If you're a world champion, similar to like Xander Zayas, who won his title very, very young. What was he, 20, 22 years old when he won his title?
We'll get to him in a second.
Yeah, it's like, well, okay, well. There's no more protecting. You are you have the crosshairs on your back. Everybody wants what you got. You can't sidestep anymore. You have to fight the big fights. You have to fight the guys who are the worthy contenders who have earned it. So, there's no tiptoeing once you're a world champion. You got to fight the best out there.
I would say that was probably the coolest fun moment. But then Jarrell Miller gets in the ring and loses his hairpiece. Oh, Chris. We've seen a lot of boxing. To be at the bar or with other, like if it happened while I was watching in my living room by myself, I would obviously run around and freak out. To be around everyone, to be around you.
And text me.
Yeah, text you, text my dad, text everyone. To be around everyone, all of our friends and family and the IBL party, to see that moment with the hair flipped up. It's now one of the most viral things. It's everywhere. It's not just it's everywhere. I can't believe what we saw with my eyes with that hair.
Jarrell, man, I've known Jarrell for 20 plus years because he was a kickboxer. We were both kickboxers back in the day, came up together. And if you know him personally the way that I do, like he's such a character and he's so funny. That couldn't have happened. I know it's like, it's embarrassing, whatever, but the way that he played off of it was brilliant. What else do you do? I mean, granted, you got to win the fight, and he did. But like he just played with it. He's got the thing. He tried to hold on to it.
He put the glove. His first reaction was to hide it. So he put his hand over the head and was probably thinking, "Oh my God, no way." And then afterwards, it was like some bleach thing. He said it threw his mom under the bus.
It's like a chemical peel or something like that. Whatever. But he also says something very, very funny after the fact. He was doing an interview afterwards, and he's like, "Find yourself a good woman before you lose your hair."
Listen, he handled it properly. Like, there's some people out there that don't like him. I'm not the biggest fan of him. Me and you have had these conversations before. He's the only fighter in the history of Inside Boxing who have to hang up on me mid interview. So I never was the biggest fan of, obviously, and everything with the PEDs and all that too. Yeah. There's a lot of fans out there like, you know, karma. It was quite the moment.
Karma. I mean, he's a meme. He's gone viral. Like, and granted, like, it's probably going to help his career. Honestly, you know, the way he handled it was impressive and smart the way he did it. But he is a character.
Oh my god!
It's everywhere. It's everywhere.
Everywhere. Like, I can't believe that. That's just like an unbelievable. Even like all the reactions, unbelievable stuff. Heading over to, that's it for MSG, right? We don't have anything else. That's really it for MSG. Xander Zayas defeated Abbas Barao. Good fight. Spirited fight. So Xander Zayas at age 23 is a unified champion at 154 pounds. He is the mover and the shaker. A $1 million gate in Puerto Rico. So you can say whatever you want about him. Dude's got two belts, and he's got motion over there in Puerto Rico. Hats off to him. He's doing it right now in probably the most competitive weight division in boxing.
I mean, what's not to like about this kid? I mean, I love this kid. I've known him for a very long time. Used to spar with him down here in South Florida. The South Florida guy. Been in the gym with him. Super, super disciplined. Trains really hard. Exact opposite of what we were saying about Teofimo Lopez in terms of what he has around him. The organization, the discipline, the structure. They got a really, really good thing going, and the kid's getting better all the time. He's only 23 years old. It's crazy. He's got two titles in the toughest, deepest weight class in the division. Calls out everybody right away. Calls out Virgil Ortiz. He told Josh Kelly, he's like, hey, come to Puerto Rico, love the fight. You know, like, he's doing all the right things, just like everything he's ever done in his life. And it's good to see him getting the results of all the hard work that he's put in for his entire life. The kid has been bred for this. Again, very, very tough weight class. We'll see where he goes from here, but I don't think he's long for 54. I think he's going to end up at 60 sooner than later.
Yeah, but he's got two belts though.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. If you can't make the weight, you can't make the weight.
But you got to do everything you can. You're 23. Like, you got two pieces of hardware that matter. Like, you can dictate things. Like Virgil doesn't have title.
Think about this. Imagine he does get the Kelly fight, and then now he's got three belts, and then there's guys like Boots, Ennis, and Virgil Ortiz, who have none, and then you got three of them. It's just the way the sport is configured. Yeah, what we were saying about 47 before, how like anything can happen. 54 seems like the opposite. We can't make the key fights there. Like 47, like all these fights seem to be possible, but for whatever reason, the roadblocks at 54 are just not working out.
154 is nuts right now. Zayas got two belts. Virgil and Boots are dancing around in negotiation. Neither guy has ever won a title, and they're pushing 30. You got Bakram Mirzakhalilov upset by Josh Kelly, who is now a title holder at 154. And you got Sebastian Fondora, who's got a title, and he's fighting Keith Thurman in late March. The division is completely flipped upside down, but you have to agree that Zayas, with the two belts, has the inside edge in terms of being a shot caller.
Absolutely. He's also, am I too early to say that this is probably the next Puerto Rican star, the superstar? This kid, he's got everything. You know,
Look at the crowd.
Yeah, the crowd speaks for it. And that was kind of the thing that I was wondering. I'm glad you led with that, because the world has been looking for that next Puerto Rican star for a while. We thought it was going to be Edgar Berlanga. Then like Matias stepped into the position. People were really pushing him. But Xander Zayas just makes so much more sense. Granted, he doesn't have the KO power like Cotto and Trinidad.
Doesn't matter.
He's got everything else.
Got two belts.
He's bilingual. He's got two belts. He can fight. His fights are entertaining. He's got a very good-looking, entertaining style. I think the upside of this kid is so high. Maybe more so than anyone else in the division in terms of marketability. He's got to be number one.
We know it's a ethnic sport. I mean, you need that. It drives business. He could stay in
awesome.
Yeah, he could stay in Puerto Rico and welcome all comers to Puerto Rico with the two belts. Like Boots, if Boots pivots from Virgil and goes for a Zayas fight, Zayas is calling the shots in that one. You know, if Josh Kelly, I mean, obviously he can put asses in seats in the UK because pretty much anyone can to a certain degree over there. But yeah, Zayas is definitely a mover and shaker at 154. If he does, we know that he could fight the Garden in June. But he's most likely going to lure a big name now, too, because with those two belts. So, like, there will be big fights. You could potentially put them in the big room at MSG. So, yeah, that was a really big win. I do wish it was on a different night because it got completely swallowed up. I mean, he's a two-division a two-time world champion or whatever it is, a unified world champion, and no one watched the fight because they couldn't get to it. And it was on the same night as the biggest fight, what we think could be the biggest fight of the year in Shakur. And that's the only downfall. And that's not his, it's out of his control. But he did what he had to do. 12,000 people, $1 million gate. Beat a really tough fighter in Barao. And it now has two belts. Josh Kelly upsets Bakram Murtazaliyev. Wow. Wow. It was a thriller of a fight. Both guys hit the canvas. Kelly, I did not think he had that in him. I thought he would stay in the fight for the first couple of rounds. Didn't see him dropping Murtazaliyev. Didn't see him rallying late, too, especially after he hit the canvas. For Murtazaliyev, it was probably, the like we said last week, the I don't think so much the weight cut, more of the freaking 500 days off. Yeah. He just didn't look, have any zap on his punches, and Kelly did.
Yeah, he, you know, being out of the ring that long and then also having to have to make weight, when you're fighting regular and you're making weight often, it gets easier. It's not easy. It doesn't get easier, but like it gets, when you get more comfortable, when you're out of the ring for a long time and then you have to come back and make the weight, it's really difficult. And he looked super drawn. Still didn't think it was going to make a difference. Cause like you said, you know, we've seen Kelly break in fights before, you know, in the Avanesian fight, he didn't look good in the Ray Robinson fight years ago, back in 2019. But man, he looked all the part on Saturday night. He had a game plan. He stuck to it. You know, he moved a lot, was avoiding contact with Murtazaliyev and really just getting him to overextend himself, and then he can counter. And Josh wasn't countering with pity pat punches. He was cracking, you know, snapping the jab, cracking the hooks, throwing those right hand, the uppercuts and left hands really, really sharp and fast, and making sure Murtazaliyev felt what was coming back at him. And yeah, he gets dropped late. He had to show what, you know, we didn't think he had to become champion, and that's what it takes. So hats off to him. You know, you proved a lot of people wrong, kid. Welcome to the room.
Yeah, that's awesome. It was really cool to see Kelly come away with that win, one of the upsets of the year so far. In terms of like the what's going on with the champions, all week long, Eddie Hearn told us that Josh Kelly is signed on to fight Boots. So now we have an out. If Boots and Virgil can't come to an agreement, we're probably going to see Boots Ennis versus Josh Kelly for the title at 154.
Very easy fight to make, obviously. You know, they're talking about it. It was weird because, so many fights were happening this weekend. Certain like specific things were getting kind of pushed under the rug. And I kept seeing that Hearn was talking a lot about, you know, Josh and just basically alluding he's winning this fight. He's going to win this fight. And it made me think, I'm like, man, Eddie's pushing this really hard. Maybe this kid really is going to win this fight. And sure enough, you know, he did. They knew something. They knew something about Josh's preparation for this fight or about Murtazaliyev, whatever that case may be. You know, that it worked out. And it seems like that's a very easy fight to make, is the Boots Ennis fight. And unfortunately, I don't think we're ever going to see Murtazaliyev again because no one, that guy doesn't have a title, why the hell are you fighting him?
But Barao should fight Murtazaliyev. And the fight, like, don't forget about us, is the poster. Yeah.
We're still here.
Remember, we were champions for a very short time, or Murtazaliyev was champion for 500 days and only fought once in between. Yeah, I still want to see Murtazaliyev. Maybe more people will want to fight him now. He was in that fight, too. I thought the scoring was very fair. Yes, it was. Wasn't like you said, Eddie Hearn knew something or any tomfoolery with the hometown scorecards. But no, I thought it was a very fair scorecard. Mm-hmm. Now we have.
Yeah, I wasn't alluding to that, you know, when I was saying about Eddie. No,
I know what you're saying. Yeah. I think it was also a Hearn thing to put pressure on the negotiations with Virgil Ortiz. It's like, we have backups. Like, they're all teasing the backups. Like, they don't have to fight each other right now because Virgil Ortiz can go fight Charlo or Spence. And now Boots can go fight Josh Kelly for a title. And then if he wins that fight, he's got a leg up in negotiations for the end of the year if you see Virgil. So that's all going to shake out. But 154 is wild right now. I mean, there's new champs. There's unified champs that are 23. There's boogeymen getting exposed.
And there's boogeymen that just aren't active or not fighting people. And it's a very, very interesting division. I mean, it's interesting because there's so much talent, but also it's interesting the way that's panning out, which isn't the best, but whatever. We're getting fights.
Who watched Zuffa boxing Sunday night? I felt like a complete degenerate. You know, I don't have a girlfriend. I don't have family. I don't have kids. I watched it because
married to the sport. This guy married to the sport.
Sicko. I'm a sick human. Did not want to watch any more boxing Sunday night. I love boxing, guys.
Yeah,
but I was like, I even texted you. I was like, I'm a little boxinged out.
And yeah, I was on the plane when you text me, and you're like, oh, super fast. You're like, I'm tired, man. I was like, yeah, I get it. I am,
you know,
too.
I get. It's like I talk boxing with my dad all day long. I talk boxing with you all day long. I talk boxing all day Saturday, and I loved it. We had a party talking boxing for 6 hours. It's like my dream. So and it was freezing, and like I was tired. Sunday night, I was like, I'm going to put on a movie, or I'm going to like watch, see what the rest of the world is doing. What's everyone? I'll catch up with my family and friends. And then I'm sucked in watching Hot Rod versus Vodzik.
Good fight.
Freaking thriller. It was a great card. I know we've criticized Zuffa. Zuffa, too, was a banger. I mean, yeah. Max Kellerman came out of the gate and said, this is a banger. No skips. That was his line for the open for this one. You know, last week he said he's waiting his whole life for this. This one was, this is like a, he said, this is like an album with no skips. Every cut's a banger. I was like, oh, that's kind of a corny line. But it was right. Max, give it to you, buddy. It was right. Vodzik was winning that fight. He was almost had Hot Rod out of there. Hot Rod nails him with one of the great shot right through the middle and wins that fight. Radzab Butiev and Boachuk was as advertised. Valenzuela looked good in the main event. I thought it was a great card, man. I mean, that was just as good as anything we've seen on the zone over the last couple of years, just as good as anything we've seen with ProBox or anyone out there. So, I'm telling you, man, Zuffa's coming because that was a good card.
You know, and a lot of people who were coming down on the first Zuffa card and saying it was underwhelming, whatever. I was like, well, yeah, but there's three cards in a month. And the next card, this one, was really good. This was really good on paper, and it was actually really good in actuality, too. So we got a lot more coming down the pipe, too. Isn't there a fight next week as well?
February 15th, in
2 weeks.
We have the heavyweights. We got F.A. Jagba. Mm-hmm. And then we got Jaya Pattaya in March, and I've heard some rumblings that it's not going to be a unification.
I heard that
some
too.
Names being thrown out there. But in terms of Zuffa 2, Dana was a lot. Dana was, yeah. Zuffa 2, Dana had a lot to say. He seemed a lot more happier than he was after Zuffa 1. He says, as we start to roll out what we have going on, it's going to rock the industry. So he said they might add more dates. He said there might be some crazy signings. Dude, I'm telling you, they got the framework in place. They have the home on Paramount. They have the broadcast team. They have the wallet.
They have the production. I've heard amazing things about the production, the people working behind the scenes, and that's something that, you know, you and I are privy to because we work in the industry, and that's really important too in terms of executing these types of shows, especially as they get bigger and more consistent, which it seems like they are. Yeah, no. The elephant is in the room with us, guys. It is here, and Zuffa is here, and it's going to be here. You know, this is going to be a big year, and I really kind of believe Dana now saying the way our year is going to end, no one's going to care about how that first Zuffa card went. It's like, it's wait till you see what these guys roll out, because they're already getting better, and it's been, you know, 2 weeks.
We've been critical, and I've said what I had to say about the uniforms and the Ali Act. We all,
I still
we know
don't
all
like
that.
The uniforms. I still don't
hate the uniforms. They need to improve those. Like, simple improvements will go a long way, and maybe they will. I was in Oscar's Clapback Thursday. You told me that. Yep. I didn't know that. Talking about the uniform. So we obviously have been critical, and we're going to remain that. That's what we do on the show. We're also going to give them props when they have a great card. Like last night, Zuffa 2 was great.
Good card.
I've said this since day one. If the fights are good, fans will watch. The majority of fans don't care about the little things like the uniforms and all that. If you heard about oh my god, did you see Sunday night these banger of these fights? So that creates buzz. And the next thing you know, you're tuning into Zuffa 3 because you got Paramount Plus, and it's way cheaper than the Zone. And you got Dana White, who when he's motivated and when he's excited, he starts flexing. And this dude can get a word out, and he does his little post fight interviews, press conferences, and he says things like that. We're gonna rock the industry, and I'm more fired up. We're ahead of schedule, and I'm more fired up than ever. I believe it. They're gonna sign some names. They're gonna sign some names that we didn't think about. They're gonna make some fights that are big fights, and yeah, man. I mean, there are aspects of it we don't like, but we said since day one that it's going to, they're gonna succeed.
It's here, yeah. if you build it, they will come. That's what I thought about when you were like, yeah, if you put on good fights, like, you can't stop it. People are going to tune in. That's Field of Dreams for you people at home, you youngins who don't know.
Come on, everyone's got to know that.
Who don't know? Oh, I bet you they don't, dude. We got a lot of really young listeners. Boxing is...
We met a lot of them.
Boxing's getting younger, man.
I loved, there was, like, groups of, like, friends that listened to the show. And I was like, you are the guys that we want listening to the show. I want everyone to listen.
Yes.
But, like... You guys are cool dudes talking boxing, knew all of our inside jokes and stuff. It was a great weekend. It was a great weekend of boxing, a lot of boxing. But this is what we do. Anything else, Chris? I'm probably going to go back and lick my wounds. So that was a long weekend.
I'm going to eat some food and take a nap.
Yeah, I did sumo on Friday, too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I had pro box on Friday, which we had a real – oh, man, good, really good card. Just real quick on that one. If anybody wants to go check that card out, there was a ridiculous banger fight. It was Valdez and Francois Scarborough. Man, these two full clip for 10 rounds. I mean, really, really good back and forth stuff. Excellent, excellent fight. Very, very fun, very entertaining. Two young guys really going for it. And you got, just like all every pro boxer, you gotta look past the numbers, because I think Valdez has like 7 losses, but the guy can really fight.
Yeah, that was a great card. Sumo was fun. We're going to have some more announcements with that. I think I'm part of the sumo team now.
I want in, Dan. Get me in. I want
great
in.
Great sport. World
tell you,
Championship
tell your brother.
Sumo.
Tell your brother I'm in.
Nick Canobio has got something good here. He's part of the production team. World Championship Sumo. Look it up on social media, on Instagram. I worked the event on Friday night, the Westchester County Center, and it was packed on a cold night. Unbelievable athleticism and just great vibes in there. All the sumo wrestlers all get along and they put on a great show. Dominus Williams, 25-year-old guy from Texas, upset the big Georgian multiple champion. It was an awesome scene. We're going to be bringing another event to Prudential Center in late March, early April. So
we had that little reaction video. I had a lot of people asking me about it, actually. So there's a vibe, man. There's interest in sumo, which, I mean, I'm not surprised. I think sumo is awesome. I've been to sumo events before, but
inside sumo live ISL.
That's it. Where if this boxing thing doesn't work out, we're gonna have to get some new. You're gonna get some new stuff on the wall, though.
Is that a little hint?
No, I'm just saying you gotta get
sumo live.
What is the name of the Yokozuna? That's the big sumo champion, right, in Japan? The Yokozuna?
Yeah, that's apparently like a term. Rikishi, I think that's what you call the fighters. Mm-hmm. The dojo is the ring. You know, I was the dojo reporter.
Look at this guy. Look at this guy. He's going to be speaking Japanese. I mean,
I walked into the arena, and I was like, where's the ring? I was looking for the ring. It's not. It's a mat.
It's not like a ring, buddy. It's a dojo, right?
You know what I mean? I was like, where's the ring? Where's the cage? It was something different. It was cool.
What a culture shock for you, Dan.
It was Westchester. Well, I wasn't like I was in Japan. Like, it was
right.
They want to make it American. They want to Americanize sumo because it's probably the most ethnic sport. When you think of sumo, first thing I think of is Japanese, big Japanese guys. But there was no Japanese wrestlers. It was all either Americans or in two Georgians.
Yeah, I remember there was a documentary that I watched a number of years ago. It's probably like a decade ago now, but they had their first non-Japanese Yokozuna. I think he was like a Hawaiian guy or a Samoan or something like that.
Wow. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Keep an eye on that. We'll be back later in the week, break down more big boxing, talk about it all. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Goodbye.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.